We are keeping democracy alive.
Check for pulse.
Stand clear. Push to shock.
So, yes, there's a huge gap between public opinion and public policy. That people don't feel that they can do very much.
You know what this is? This is a very Hamiltonian system. Alexander Hamilton being the guy here in a very un-Jeffersonian.
In the case of the Republicans, it's dramatically the opposite. But even in the case of the Democrats.
An absolute typhoon of terror against African Americans in the South.
America's fascists are those people who think that Wall Street comes first and the American people come second.
Really seen as a financial sector that's gotten out of hand.
The shootings, the violence, that is not the drug problem. That is, in fact, the drug policy problem.
I speak tonight for the dignity of man.
And the dignity of humanity requires fair trials, requires that justice be carried out so that people who have not committed crimes are not punished for crimes they did not commit. Sometimes, as we know, there is a rush to judgment and injustices are done. Our legal system is absolutely essential to a democracy. And when our legal system takes a hit, doesn't function right, it's a wound to democracy itself. Is it time to take another look at what many thought of as the trial of the century? Millions of people around the world have heard of Pamela Smart, the Ice Princess, the Black Widow, the Hampton, New Hampshire school teacher who hired students to kill her husband. That's the narrative. It was a perfect Hollywood movie being played out live on RTVs around the world. People were glued to that trial. Sex, murder, teenage kids. And she got what she deserved, right? Life in prison without the possibility of parole. It was all so convincing. Who could have any sympathy for this heartless young woman who had sex with a 15-year-old boy? Up until recently, I gotta tell you, I was one of those who had no sympathy. I had no doubts about her guilt. Then I began to look into the reality behind the truly bizarre, frankly sickening, media-created circus that victimized a lot of people. Yes, including Pam Smart. It was a runaway stampede, that trial was. A high-visibility entertainment spectacle, not justice at all. Take a listen to this discussion for the next 50 or so minutes, and maybe you'll see, too. This was a story that was a made-for-TV plot. And it wouldn't be any good, after all, unless she were found guilty. But while Pam Smart acknowledged that she did act quite unwisely by having sex with young Billy Flynn, after the circus left town, Smart was put in jail, as were the actual murderous three boys. But those boys are all free, while Pam Smart remains in jail. And after, at first, having no sympathy, I've come to the conclusion that she was quite wrongly convicted and a grave injustice has been done. And that 25 years in jail for a crime for which she was wrongly convicted is much more than enough. Pam Smart should be free to live a life. I'm very pleased to have with us Dr. Eleanor Pam, expert on women and violence, who serves as Pam Smart's media spokesperson, academic mentor, confidant, and advocate for more than 23 years. Thank you so much for being with us on Keeping Democracy Alive, Dr. Eleanor Pam. Thank you.
It's a great pleasure to be with you today, Bert.
Well, there's so much to examine about this case from 25 years ago. Let's just dig right in. The prosecuting attorney, Paul Maggiotto, said at the end of the trial that, quote, the tapes removed any possible doubt, unquote. It seems that those were the items of so-called evidence that convicted her. The impression today, for those who remember, is that the statement is true, that the tapes made by Pam Smart's friend at the time, Cecilia Pierce, who was secretly wired, removed any doubt of her guilt. Can you say with assurance that those secret recordings did not, in fact, prove her guilt?
Absolutely, I can say that. You know, Cecilia Pierce was herself an unindicted co-conspirator. She was part of the murder plot. She knew in advance that the boys were planning to murder Greg Smart, and she went further than that. She tried to get the gun twice and was unsuccessful. So she was knee-deep, you know, in the situation. Now, Pam was shut out of all information by the police because she was a suspect. So they weren't giving her any information about her own life, actually, the murder of her husband. The only time she found anything out at all was when she turned on the television set and would hear about facts that had to do with herself. But Cecilia was dropping little hints and telling her that she knew a lot more about the murder. She actually revealed some information that nobody else could have known except the direct parties.
Wow.
So Pam, who was at the time in shock, very much grief-stricken about what had happened, she was actually having very close to what would today be called a nervous breakdown and had gone to see a doctor and asked for some medication to calm herself and, in fact, wanted even to be hospitalized. She was so prostrate by the death of her husband, with whom she'd been married only less than a year. And he prescribed Prozac, the effects of which we didn't know in those days. That was 2.5 decades ago. And the pills weren't working as much as she hoped they would, and she actually doubled on her own the prescription and the amounts she took.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe personally that she was plunged into a kind of mania. But anyway, aside from all of that, and the symptoms of that are excitability, impossible to sleep, grandiosity. But she wanted on her own to pump Cecilia and find out what she knew. Because the only person that seemed to have any information other than the media was Cecilia, and it appeared she had inside information. So she decided that she would talk to Cecilia and see what she could find out, and she would play along as if she knew more than she did. The lawyer, Pam's lawyer, said to her, "Do not speak to Cecilia Pierce because she is wired." And then Greg's best friend, Brian, told her the same thing. He said, "Whatever you do, do not speak to Cecilia Pierce. She's going to be wearing a wire, and she's going to be trying to entrap you." As soon as she heard that, Pam picked up the phone and called Cecilia Pierce. So you could see that she was not in a mental state that was rational at that point. Anyway, she did speak to Cecilia, which went, I think there were, I don't know, at least 4 tapes of that. And she did try to pump her, but the tapes themselves were totally inaudible. Nobody could understand them. When they were played at trial, in fact, Greg Smart's father took off his earphones and he said, "I can't hear a damn thing." And Pam Smart's mother took off her earphones and passed them to Pam's sister and said, "There's no point in listening. I can't hear anything." Everybody admitted that the tapes were inaudible. So what the prosecution did was, and probably it was Maggiotto, handed the tapes to his probably secretary or somebody that has never been identified because it was never signed. So there was no signature at the end of the transcription. We don't know actually who transcribed them.
Hmm.
And he said, "Wow. Sit with these tapes and write a transcript as best you can as to what you think you heard." So she did. And miraculously presented this unauthenticated transcript of what the tapes purportedly said. Now, there were a number of other problems with that as well. Pam and Cecilia's voices were very similar.
Hmm.
So often the transcription ascribed things that Pam said to Cecilia and things that Cecilia said to Pam. Also, during the course of the conversation, Pam would say, "Uh-huh, yeah, right," as Cecilia was talking. And they sequenced the yes or uh-huh to indicate agreement with a statement that was being made, as if Pam was saying, yes, that's true. But it's not the way normal conversations go on a telephone conversation. In all events, these were given to the jury, and the jury was told by the judge properly, do not rely on the transcript, but on the tapes. Well, jurors are human beings. They're not going to sit for any number of hours and listen to inaudible tapes. They're going to look at the transcript, which is what they did. And the transcript does not represent the tapes. There were gaps. There was tremendous inaudibility. And the first two tapes, in which Pam said, I had nothing to do with it, and denied any involvement, those weren't even presented.
Wow.
So there's a number of other things. There was a Kane report where a Secret Service agent who then became an expert on tape analysis did a report in which she said there were suspicious gaps and starts and stops, and a number of machines were used, and all of which casts suspicion on the authenticity of the tapes.
And
so.
Well, I was just gonna. Was this the tape? Was that? I can't think of a better phrase. The smoking gun. Is this what sunk? What was used to convict?
Absolutely. That was the strongest evidence that persuaded everybody that she was in on it and was talking to Cecilia and admitting and making confessions of guilt. Pam has never, not then and not now, ever said she participated in this murder, either directly or indirectly. She's never admitted guilt, ever. And Cecilia had a great deal, to benefit through this wiring. First of all, she was illegally participating because she was a minor herself and her parents hadn't given her permission. Mm. So we'll start with that. And she made a deal that she would not, be indicted, which she should have been, along with the boys. Even her uncle, who was in prison, was thrown in for good measure, and he was let go for some other offense. And then later, she got a $100,000contract from Once Upon a Time Productions to, write about or, be a part of some show. And she went all over on national television, talking about Pam's guilt. And it was nonsense. She would say things like, well, Pam killed Greg because she wanted custody of the dog. Or Pam killed him because she wanted the furniture or because she wanted the condo. Well, Bert, the reality is that this was 1990, not 1890. If Pam wanted to leave her husband, she could have divorced him. No problem. She didn't have to murder him. In fact, she could have annulled. They didn't have children. So that would have been easy enough and didn't have to murder him. She didn't have a custody issue because they had no children. They rented the condo. They didn't even own it, so there were no property issues. Well, the furniture was bought by herself. Each of them had a vehicle. Pam, in fact, had more education than Greg did. She had a college degree. Greg had a high school. She had a profession, as he did not. And she loved him. So if you want to send your husband off, there are better ways to do it than murdering him, jeopardizing your life, your career, your reputation, your standing in the community, your liberty, and everything else. It made absolutely no sense whatever for her to have Greg Smart murdered.
But after looking into this, it does kind of appear that Billy Flynn, the boy with whom she had the brief affair, if he had had the impression that their affair was indeed over, that Pam and Greg were going to reconcile, then Billy Flynn could not have his, illicit affair anymore. It seems to me there's a motive.
For him to kill Greg.
Yes, for him to decide to kill Greg. Nobody.
That's true. That could be a motive. But, you know, there's something that the folks don't know about Billy Flynn. As a matter of fact, there's a great deal that the folks don't know about Billy Flynn.
And he's the trigger
person. Now, as you so beautifully articulated at the beginning of the program and setting the stage for this, the narrative, the media narrative, which was adopted, of course, by the court and then by the public and then by the politicians and then and on and on and on, this is a story, allegedly, of a school teacher who induced a virginal, young, innocent teenager and his friends to murder in order for him to preserve his sexual relationship.
Right.
He was so besotted, and she was so evil and manipulative that she used him to further her own ends. That's basically the story, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, first of all, she wasn't a teacher.
Right.
We'll start with that. She was never a teacher.
Right.
She was an administrator, a low-level administrator, in fact, a first-year administrator for the school district, not for a high school.
Right.
Secondly, and this is going to come as a big surprise to your audience, Billy Flynn was not a virgin. Billy Flynn, at the same time he was with Pam Smart, was having a relationship with a woman several years older than himself, just like Pam, also a blonde, and he had, in addition to that, three people with whom he dated throughout high school. So he was a sexually experienced guy, and I would even say probably more experienced than Pam.
Mm-hmm.
So that turns everything upside down.
My goodness.
Thirdly, and this is really another, you know, interesting thing, it doesn't seem likely that Flynn himself was the shooter. It's much more likely that Randall was the shooter. First of all, Flynn was left-handed. The shooter was right-handed.
Wow.
He demonstrated, and Randall is right-handed. He demonstrated the positions of how he shot Greg in the court. The forensics guy said that is an impossibility. For him to have assumed that position as a left-handed guy, he would basically be pointing the gun at himself and could have shot himself.
Mm.
And there were any number of other things in the description that were inconsistent with the layout of the room in the condo. So it's our belief, and it's been our belief, that it was Randall who was the shooter, not Flynn. And
Pete Randall,
Flynn,
yeah.
Flynn and he concocted the story because it fit this other narrative. It made the public sympathetic because of this love-starved story, which is, you know, the biggest con, I think, in American jurisprudence.
Hmm.
And so, okay, so then why the murder? If it wasn't because he was so obsessed with her, which is, again, the narrative, that he wanted, you know, to have her for himself, if no, you know, all of that.
Yeah.
Well, we know that Randall was a very violent guy. He actually beat his stepfather very badly, nearly killed him.
Wow.
Bludgeoned him. It was in his nature, not in Flynn's nature. And his goal in life was to be a hitman. And afterwards, when they had accomplished the murder, they were singing joyfully in the car and laughing and making jokes and everything and talking excitedly about the power and thrill of killing. You know, very unrepentant. These were sadistic, heartless young men. And if people think that they needed an adult to guide them and come up with this plot, because youngsters are not capable of this on their own, all they have to do is look at Columbine and know that that's not true.
Wow, if you
they
just...
They were even sadistic towards the little dog. They beat Greg Smart before they murdered him. And they took this dog, and they kicked it down the basement stairs, and they talked later on in the car, among other things, and they thought it was funny, about hearing the thump, thump, thump of this little Shih Tzu's body as it bounced down the steps to the bottom.
How is that stuff known? What is that? I had not heard that story.
Well, Randall.
Peter Randall,
Fowler. Fowler was the
Raymond
guy
Fowler
in the car.
Okay.
And Fowler really was kind of picked up at the last minute, and he thought he was going to the smart condo to rob it. He didn't have the same information the others had. He didn't know that this was going to be a murder. And so he was brought along to sit next to Latimer and keep him company while the other two went into the condo to kill Greg. And when they ran out, and they're holding the smoking, literally smoking gun, and pulling off their gear, and they also had stuff on their hands. I think they had garbage bags to cover their fingerprints and so on. And they got into the car, and they were very high and excited. And they talked, and they sang, and that was the first he learned about the murder.
So this information comes from Raymond Fowler?
Who? Raymond Fowler.
He spilled the beans on that. And is it true that all these boys are now free?
They're all out, all four. Two have been out for years. The other two got out about a half a year ago. They went through halfway houses and so on. They've been in minimum security prisons, while Pam's in a maximum security prison.
Right.
And let me tell you, Bert, she's had a rough ride. Because when she was first incarcerated, of course, she was so hated. She was so infamous.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
And painted in such disgusting, disgraceful, shameful the characteristics ascribed to her, which is not the Pam Smart I know. So the administration, the guards, the inmates, they didn't treat her well. She was raped by a guard in prison. She was brutally beaten and battered by inmates. She was in the hospital. She's got a plate in one side of her face where she doesn't have any feelings. They fractured her eye socket. Her knees were messed up. She's in they knocked out practically a tooth. She's in constant pain. And still, despite all of that, she spends her days, she's very religious. She goes to church 3-4 times a week and is active in that, does praise dancing. She teaches and tutors people for their GEDs and for their other degrees. She works in the AIDS office and helps people. She worked with the mentally and emotionally challenged. She helps them with hygiene. She gives away her worldly or shares her worldly goods with everybody. She counsels people. She's an extraordinary, decent, kind, generous woman. And when I read the descriptions that are just arbitrarily slapped onto her.
Well, it's part of the story.
She is.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And it fits the narrative. I mean, it's a made-for-TV it's a movie that was happening there. And just looking at if you just tuned in to Keeping Democracy Alive, our guest today is Dr. Eleanor Pam. She is an expert on women and violence, and she serves as the media spokesperson, academic mentor, confidant, and advocate for the jailed Pam Smart for more than 23 years. We're talking about the injustice that happened. What I find amazing is so many aspects of what happened during the court proceedings are just breathtaking. For example, I could start almost anywhere. The boys, Billy Flynn, Raymond Fowler, and Pete Randall, it's almost beyond belief. They were housed together during the trial and were handed ample opportunity to concoct a story together to make sure they got all the details right. Is that
they even watched each other testify on television.
How could that be considered a fair trial?
You couldn't have given them, a better shot at conspiracy than they had. And by the way, her name was never even brought into the case until they were charged as adults and were facing a capital punishment possibility. As soon as that status changed, suddenly everybody was pointing fingers at her, saying she made us do it. Now, she didn't even have a relationship with the other three. So for her to have manipulated four people is extraordinary. And when they questioned Raymond Fowler, for example, and they kept bringing her name, did Pam tell you this? Did Pam make you do it?
Uh-huh.
He said, I don't know. I never spoke to her. So, it was right from the get-go, they were hell-bent, meaning the prosecution and the boys, and then ultimately the Smart family, who were being told that it was Pam who was the prime mover in this.
Right.
Everybody, the media, the pile-on was extraordinary. She had nobody in her corner. Everybody heard this narrative and hated her. And then, of course, came Murder in New Hampshire and Joyce Maynard's To Die For, which really sealed her fate, because when guards would be particularly difficult with her and hard on her, they would say things like, "I know what you did. I saw the movie."
Right.
And, you know, ultimately I dealt with Joyce Maynard and I contacted her and, you know, we did some back and forth, and she said, you know, and I said, people confuse Pam with your character. I know your character's fiction, but people think it's really
right.
Pam. And I said, I'd love you to clarify that. And so she wrote something for her website clarifying it, saying it's Suzanne Moretto isn't Pam Smart. It's not her family. It's not her story. But it was loosely based on her.
Right.
And inspired by her, but it's not her story.
I got to tell.
And then recently, Joyce went even further, and she wrote a letter to the governor of New Hampshire saying, "Please, I support her freedom.
Really,
this is not my film, my story, my book."
Wow, I had the impression from learning about this that she was kind of parasitic, you know, and just kind of enjoying it at the time. I mean, maybe she changed and recognized that her book and her movie did some harm. And you know, as you say, the treatment she got in jail. And back to the proceedings of the court itself, the judge in the case was Douglas Gray. I understand he was heard saying that he hoped Clint Eastwood would play him in when the movie was made. In what way, I mean, that's just...
He didn't want to let go of the case because it was his ride to fame.
Hmm.
He really didn't want to let... He refused to change venue. He refused to delay the trial. Every possible thing that he could do, and he just denied her rights, one right after the other, in every respect. It was amazing. Everybody wanted a piece of the act.
Right.
You know, including the trial judge, frankly.
Yeah.
And and then we had the jury.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that.
Some of the nonsense that went on there.
Well, was there an indication with the jury that with all the international attention and great spectacle, that some may have worried that they might look like fools if they failed to provide the right ending to the narrative?
Absolutely. There was even a poll, Bert. They took a poll. Should Pam be guilty or innocent? You know, found guilty or innocent? And the newspaper said she, you know, should be found guilty. So how does a jury go back to its community, you know, and face the wrath of the community if they let this evil, seductress, manipulative, exploitive person who is the who did all of these awful, unspeakable things? How, you know, the pressure on them was extraordinary. But, you know, even worse than that, some of them shouldn't have even been on the jury. And I'll give you an example.
Yeah, why?
One guy was seen in a bar because MUR was replaying at night the doings of the day, the trial of the day. And people were sitting and chatting and talking about it. And he was there, one of the jurors, and he was participating in the conversation. Somebody called Pam's parents and said, "There's a juror in the bar right now talking about the case." And so they contacted the judge, and the judge called him in and said, "Is it true?" And the juror said, "No." And the judge said, "Okay, rejoin your fellow jurors."
Wow.
And he did that ex parte, by the way, with no lawyers from Pam's side in that discussion, which is also, by the way, he did three ex parte communications during that trial.
And some may not know that term, ex parte.
Ex parte means without the representatives of both sides being present during the discussion.
Yeah, and you're not allowed to do that. It amazes. How could Well, there's so many errors and problems in this. How could you appealed the case was appealed, I assume, and there were so many different instances on which clearly there was error made. What happened to the appeals?
Because appeals can only be filed on behalf of things that were raised during the trial, objections that were raised during the trial, and the appellate lawyer, just used one. Not everything should. I mean, there were many things that should have been preserved, in my opinion, that weren't. Many errors, many reversible errors.
Sure.
But the appellate lawyer decided to focus on the undue publicity as the point of his appeal. He didn't use anything else. And that was rejected. Now, it's hard to believe that was rejected, but it was. So that leaves Pam really in the position of the only appeals that she can have are either newly discovered evidence, because there's a statute of limitations, most of which has expired in terms of stuff that she could have, should have appealed on, about. But now it's only about newly discovered evidence. And you only get a year statute of limitation on that to file from the point of the discovery. She's been limited and limited and limited in her legal efforts. And the main thing that she has would be the executive grace of the governor, meaning sentence reduction, pardon, clemency, or some variation of that. And Pam's had a problem with the governors of New Hampshire because they're politicians.
You noticed.
And the hatred towards Pam Smart generated by the media in this state, which is a small state, is so extraordinary that most politicians, unless they're very brave, don't want to risk their political careers by giving her a break at all, in any respect, on that sentence, which is life without the possibility of parole.
Right.
So she never even gets out of the box. She's not even entitled to a hearing, and they sure as hell haven't given her any.
Right.
So, there's a famous picture of Pam's mother on her knees at an executive council hearing, asking if she could at least get on their calendar so she could speak. All she wanted to do is speak. And no, and no, and no, and no. And every time she's made an effort towards the governor, whichever governor it is, Republican or Democrat, male or female, from the very get-go, not only do they say no up front, but the executive council does as well, before they've received a single piece of paper from us, before we've even written a single sentence. A couple of years ago, the union leader, was running story after story of executive council saying, no way in hell. No, never. I will never give her. I will say no. Up front, not having even gotten anything from us, asking them for anything. So, what it does is every successive generation has been poisoned,
right?
Because the response has been always so blanket. The last governor, for example, Maggie Hassan. She was in office very, it seemed to me like minutes before some reporter was already asking the question, would you ever consider sentence reduction or clemency or pardon or whatever the language was for Pam Smart?
Mm-hmm.
And immediately the answer was, she had a fair trial. No.
Right.
And I had to kind of get involved with that, because there is something, even for Pam Smart, some kind of due process that she, like every other citizen of New Hampshire, is entitled to. And it seems like there's this exception with her. Everybody has this closed mind.
Yes.
And she's not only guilty, but she's damned forever. She the sin is so extraordinary that the crime is almost irrelevant when it comes to Pam Smart.
Yeah, that's so. I think that's really fascinating, that the sin of having an affair with a 15-year-old boy, there's no question that happened, but that is not murder. It is, it's completely...
Exactly right, and you know, that affair was only a matter of 7 or 8 weeks, on and off.
Right.
From the minute that she began it, she tried to break it off. He would beg and he would cry.
Right.
And she'd feel sorry for him and she would relent. And finally, he became rather menacing. And she got scared of him.
Oh, my.
Became afraid of him and
wow.
decided that she'd better tell her husband because she could not get away from him.
Uh-huh.
And he left some kind of musical message on her phone one day, and she knew it was time. So she did tell him, and Greg himself had been unfaithful.
Right.
Which began this whole thing
right.
in the first place.
Yes.
She really, her self-esteem was in the toilet when she found out they'd only been married 6 months. And Flynn was flattering and made her feel better. And she said any other time in her life, this never would have happened.
Hmm.
She wasn't interested in him at all.
Right.
But he was the only thing that made her feel better. And she kind of fell into it and regretted it instantly.
Of course.
By the way, I'll tell you how they met so that, you know, people don't have this student-teacher thing in their brain forever.
Sure.
But when she told her husband, of course he was furious, and he asked her one question. And the single question was, do I know him? Which is really a kind of human question. And she said, no, you don't. And he said, I would like us to reconcile because I have strayed and you have strayed and we're kind of even, but I don't want you to ever see him again. And would you tell him that tomorrow and that be the end of it? And she said, absolutely. And she did. And this time she said he didn't cry, he didn't beg. She told him that her husband knew and they were going to try to repair their marriage and they were going to look for a house and they were going to start a family.
Hmm.
And his face, she said, went blank. And kind of hardened, and she said, and then very shortly thereafter, Greg was murdered. Now, whether that was ego or pride, this whole lovesick thing, if he was so lovesick, what was he doing with this other woman, whose name I know, by the way, and I know where she lives, and who admitted to Pam's mother, who actually called her, that Flynn perjured himself on the stand.
Mm. Can't there be a mistrial for perjury? Or can't, isn't there
not
some...
only a mistrial, but that would
nullify
the plea bargain.
But that can't...
And they would change places with her. This woman isn't, you know, she's been hiding this information. You know, there are other people involved in this case who knew so much more than they admitted. And are so afraid, even today, to step forward and talk about what they knew. When Flynn went on the stand and he did his famous crying act with the Kleenexes,
right.
which he did, by the way, later on, when same thing with the Kleenex and dabbing at his eyes when he went before the judge for a sentence reduction.
Mm-hmm.
It's a successful act. He seems to get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
He had taken cocaine. We had a prisoner who was in the same cell who told us, he took cocaine because it made him more emotional. And when he came out, and I don't know whether I'm allowed to use any curse words here because quoting him, how far can I go?
Well, let's see. Maybe you can help people.
Okay, all right. When he got out, he said to his friends, and he was, you know, snapping his fingers and chewing his gum and looking very cocky, he said, did I cry hard enough and did they buy it? Those BSing a-holes.
Mm-hmm.
How's that? Those mm-hmm. jurors who mm-hmm. are BSing a-holes. He had nothing but contempt for everybody. And that was the real Billy Flynn.
Oh, my goodness. If you just...
And he wrote, and we have that, by the way. We have this note. And he also wrote something about, I wasn't going to let my boys go down. I had to do this. I mean, I think he would have preferred not to involve Pam, but ultimately, she was his ticket out of prison. and the only way he could free his friends.
So much self-preservation, and you talk about the governor. What the political courage it would take, because, as you said, people have their hate. People have their minds made up. What politician, and this governor is now currently running for U.S. Senate, and I
and
have...
And that's why it's a non-starter with her.
Absolutely.
Because she's not... She's still in dependent upon the constituency.
Yeah.
And although I have to tell you, Bert, we are beginning to make some inroads and changing some hearts and minds about this case.
Yeah.
Well, I see some signs of it.
It's been 25 years. I mean, I took a look into it. I'm surprised. You know, I was buying into the narrative as well. And speaking of the narrative and the whole thing, I remember there was this lead local TV reporter, Bill Spencer. Did he have a role in subverting justice, really? He was a major role.
I mean, this guy bragged about it. I mean, he released a video even before the trial began, pointing out her guilt, you know. I mean, he lied, he distorted, he perverted, he was a very ambitious guy.
Yes.
He printed lies, he was on television, he's still doing it. And he was a disgrace to the profession. She told me of an incident where he knocked on her door, and she was in the shower, and she said, "I can't talk to you, Bill, right now." And he got on, after she closed the door, he got on camera, and he was talking about that she was crying and that she was guilty because they had just arrested Flynn, and she was so distraught about her boyfriend and whatever it was. But he used every benign episode in which he had any hand at all to reemphasize and lobby and reinforce the perception that Pam Smart was guilty, 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 guilty.
Yes.
And it was his mission, and it was his ticket to the big time.
Yeah.
And he was even in this picture, this documentary that HBO sponsored called Captivated. I don't know if you saw it. Did you see that, Bert?
Yeah, I believe I did. I looked at
excellent
a few different
documentary.
Oh, yes.
Laying out the problems in that trial and the unfairness of her sentence.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's now in DVD. I think it's going to be on iTunes.
Mm.
It premiered at the Sundance Festival.
Oh, wow.
And I get hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of letters from people who have seen it talking about how shocked they are and how they've done a 180, just as you have,
yeah,
as they began to look at the case.
Well, it's uncomfortable to, you know, a belief that people have had for a long time to see, oh, it's not right. It's not accurate. I wanted to ask also about, there's so many aspects of it. I was fascinated to hear the audio tape recordings of one juror who, and this is legitimate, I believe, I think she did this legally, she was not allowed to speak about the case, but she spoke her thoughts into a tape recorder at the end of the trial every day. Tell us about that and what she observed about justice or the lack thereof. That was fascinating stuff.
Yeah, that was in Captivated, too. They called her juror number 13. Her name, in fact, is Karen Sicard. I was very impressed by her perceptions. And even though, you know, there's a real question about the kosherness of having done that, I had a lot of respect for her observations.
Oh, yeah. She was troubled, clearly.
She was appalled, you know, and it was really quite instructive to listen to her perceptions of things as they went along. You're quite right. I mean, the jurors, there were a number of things. There was another one who, you know, made some money the next day from a newspaper article. I mean, the jurors themselves, you know, there were some problems for sure. The worst one was somebody named Charlotte Jeffs, I believe. And she was 80 years old, and she was in the jury pool. and this is before she was chosen to be a juror, and she was talking about the wickedness of Pam Smart and how guilty she was, and, you know, just running her mouth in the pool, trying to contaminate everybody's position before the jury was even selected. And, of course, when she was brought before the judge to see whether she could be objective and raised her hand and said, "Yes, Your Honor, I have no pre-ideas or preconceptions about her guilt or innocence," that was a total lie. She did, and she was quite vocal, and she did any number of other things to show how prejudiced she was. She was chosen as a juror. So, and then the judge himself, you know, they were split. They were three, four, and three against, and six. Neutral, undecided. And he came in, and he, you know, basically said that if they didn't come up with a decision immediately, he was going to sequester them for the Easter holidays. And within, I don't know, within hours, they came in with a guilty. So, I mean, there was a lot of heavy-handed stuff that went on and a lot of coercive stuff that went on.
And Pam Smart has been sequestered for quite a few Easter Sundays.
Quite right. She won't see daylight until 99.
Right.
She's 46 years old. I met her when she was 23, in her first year at Bedford, and I've been on her side ever since, and I'm proud to stand with her.
Well, we can talk about what people can do at the end of the show, and one of the things I wanted to ask about, you know, if people know anything about this trial, you remember the pictures. We were bombarded with pictures of her in a bikini. It went everywhere. This was more wonderful, crowd-pleasing spectacle. What do you think the effects of those photos were on the trial?
Well, the photos themselves were bogus because the bikini shot, the famous bikini shot,
right,
was a picture she took posing with her girlfriend, Tracy, for a modeling contest. They took pictures of each other. And the woman who developed the pictures made an extra copy from the outtakes and gave it to Billy Flynn's mother, who gave it to the prosecution, and they pretended that that was a photo that Pam used to keep Billy Flynn sexually enthralled with her, that it was part of her, the tools in her box to sexualize their relationship and to, you know, keep him hot and bothered. And the reality is that Billy Flynn never saw those pictures until the prosecution produced them at trial.
Well, it sticks in people's minds. It just paints that picture.
It does. It does. And you know, sadly, Bert, when that guard came in and raped Pam in prison, where prison is supposed to have care, custody, and control of a prisoner, and the care was missing, at least then. And he came in the next day, and she thought he was coming back to rape her again. And he said, if you tell anybody, I will have your parents killed because I have their addresses, which he did, because all the you sign in and you put your address in when you come to the prison to visit. And he said, as insurance, I want pictures of you nude so that I can demonstrate that this was consensual. And she refused. And they negotiated, and finally she agreed that she would give him a few pictures in her lingerie. He posed her exactly the way the bikini shot was.
God.
And then he sold it to the National Enquirer, who wrote a story with those pictures saying Pam was the head of a drug and sex ring, which included both inmates and guards, at which point she was thrown into solitary confinement and rearrested. and that was a whole other story, which I won't even go into, but it's been so difficult for her. So what a hard ride she's had in every sense from the time she was 21 years old for having made this one slip, because she herself wasn't very far from being a teenager herself.
Right.
and wasn't mature enough at the time to resist the difficulty of what was going on.
People make mistakes like that. I mean, how many marriages...
We all do.
How many marriages are there where one has an affair so the other has an affair, they both regret it, and they try to get back together? It sounds... I mean, it happens.
Absolutely.
And yet the sentence...
And especially, you know, the adjustment in a first-year marriage.
Sure.
So it was tough, and she was doing her best, and the world was in front of her. She loved Greg and talks about him a lot.
Hmm.
And also, she had, you know, just gotten a job, and they were going to have babies, and that was really what her goal was. I mean, they picture her as this grasping, ambitious person who wanted to be Barbara Walters, and, you know, and all of that. Just, I mean, Pam just wanted to be like her mother, you know, the PTA poster girl, the Girl Scout poster girl, making apple pie and baking and, you know, taking the class on trips. That was what the family she came from, and that's who she herself is.
Still is. And yet the sentence meted out to Pam Smart is worse than given to Charlie Manson. That just
absolutely
blows me away. That's just
unbelievable.
Life without the chance of parole. As of June 2015, all the boys, the actual people who were involved with the murder, they're all out of jail. Why has the state of New Hampshire wanted Raymond Fowler to stay silent? Tell us a little bit about that.
It's not that they've allowed him to stay. He has no reason to. It's not in his best interest to say anything. When he was put on Pam's witness list originally, suddenly he was arrested for something else. And it was clear as a bell that they did not want him speaking at all about this case. And he was whisked away. He was separated from the three boys right from the get-go.
Mm.
And something strange has happened to Raymond. He saw murder in New Hampshire, I think, about 11 times.
Mm.
And what happened was, as these years went by, and, you know, he's not a rocket scientist. He's, he was a petty thief. He was never a murderer. And he's always, you know, he's come from a working class. I mean, he's just a quiet guy who boosted things, and that was his thing. He was not violent.
Right.
Anyway, as time went on, he began to believe that what he saw, and which he remembers perfectly, he remembers every scene in that movie perfectly, because he's seen it over and over again. He began to believe that what was in the movie was what happened in real life.
Sure.
And when he talks about what happened recently, he actually practically quotes the dialogue of the movie and describes the scene in the movie perfectly.
Mm.
So he's got this substitute memory going on now, so that he couldn't even tell you today what happened, you know, 25 years ago. It's an interesting phenomenon that's kind of common with certain people.
Oh, yeah. Memory can change. It can be adjusted.
Yep.
And the widespread belief by a lot of people is that, oh, everyone who's in prison insists they're innocent and that Pam Smart is no different from all those guilty people. Comments?
You'd have to be out of your mind crazy, which she's not, to prefer to spend the rest of your life in prison rather than... I mean, just to prove what? That you're stubborn, that you're prideful? You know, she knows that unless she falls on the sword and says, I'm guilty, nobody's going to give her a break. And yet, she never took a plea bargain, never asked for one. To this day, has never, I mean, Greg's father and his family kind of indicated that if she admitted it, they would, you know, pitch for her. She's never done it and never will do it because it's not true.
Right.
And she cannot say that she did it if she didn't do it. And she knows the consequences. She's living the consequences.
Yeah,
has suffered a lot. But it's impossible for her to say, look, I'm remorseful because I killed or helped kill or planned to kill my husband. She can't say it.
No.
And she'd rather be where she is forever. Believe me, she doesn't want to.
Right.
Than do that.
So her sentence...
She believes she's got strong faith, and she just can't admit to something. But, you know, she's thought about it. Her mother has certainly urged her. She said, I would understand it if you would do that just to get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
Pam can't do it and won't do it.
So her sentence is life without the chance of parole. What?
Yeah.
What can people do? If people are interested in this and want to do something about it, there are things that are going on that perhaps people can get involved in.
Well, first of all, we would love it if people would start to talk about it in social media, you know, and try mm-hmm. to... This is not, I mean, I'm of a different generation, so I don't deal with social media, but she does have Twitter, Facebook, and a website. And it would be great if people would, when stories are done, if they would, you know, add their comments to the stories.
What are the links or whatever on the social media? What are the, like...
Well, PamelaSmart.com is her website.
Uh-huh.
And Twitter, of course, is at PamelaSmart. And Facebook is Facebook.
Right.
I'm lucky enough that I can, I'm lucky even to be able to tell you this.
I understand. I can relate. Believe me.
I'm so far behind the curve.
Yeah.
So there's that. And there's also at such point as we will file a petition, which we will. Don't know if it'll be with this governor because mm-hmm. of the political situation.
And she is notably political, yeah.
And we think that that might be a non-starter, especially since from the very beginning, you know, she's come out with a point of view publicly. And so there would be that, certainly. When the
and there are two...
Or candidates.
Yes, candidates. There's one Republican and two Democrats who are currently running for governor, and people could talk to them as the campaign.
Exactly. Thank you very much, Bert, for that. And also the Executive Council,
yeah.
which, you know, they're serious players in this. They're the ones that allegedly recommend to the governor, although
yeah.
with respect to Pam Smart, it's been the other way around. The governor has instructed the Executive Council.
Right. Well,
so
maybe... There's that old saying, keep hope alive. This is quite an amazing story. And it was such a circus way back 25 years ago, and a lot of people are still suffering for it, not the least, most clearly, is Pamela Smart herself. Eleanor Pam.
And if anybody has any information, Bert, please, they
find
me at eleanorpam@aol.com.
Eleanorpam.
And please contact me. I'm on the website. I'm very visible on the website because I want people to contact me. If they want to also write to Pam or give her some financial support or whatever it is, or just moral support, that's fine. That address is also on the website, her address, P.O. Box 1000, Bedford Hills, New York, 10507. It would be great if people would kind of weigh in and help us to create a groundswell of outrage at what has been done to this one woman unnecessarily, because so many people have exploited and profited from this outrage.
Yeah, what a price
injustice.
She's paid. Thank you so much for being with us. Very, very informative.
Thank you, Bert.
The case is still alive.
Love and mercy, that's what you need tonight. So love and mercy to you and your friends tonight. I was sitting in my room in the news came on TV, a lot of people out there hurting, and it really scares me.